Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
And we're continuing our coverage ahead of September's House of Keys general election now by speaking to another candidate planning to contest September's poll. We're joined by 51-year-old Kat Turner, who'll be standing in the constituency of Douglas East. Good afternoon, Kat. Welcome to the programme.
Hello. Thanks very much.
I've met you before because we've talked about various sort of green issues and things like that on the programmes, but explain to the people of Douglas who don't know you about a bit more about yourself.
Surely. Okay. As you say, I'm 51 years old. I have two glorious little girls, Catherine and Lizzie, who are nine, and I have had a varied career. I spent some 30 years in financial services, with various times as policy advisor to the then Financial Supervision Commission. I wrote a number of books on financial services and governance. I did a lot of lecturing. I still keep a toe in that particular pond, because in the UK, I am on the UK's Financial Services Institute's Sustainability Committee, and various other organisations like that. So I had a long and interesting career there. That was brought to an end when I had something of an alcoholic implosion, which meant that, try as I could not get well again whilst staying in that industry. So I had to take about 2 years out, really. And although it was a rotten time for my girls and for me and the people that were trying to support me, in fact, what I've learned from it has made me very grateful. Nowadays, my time is spent getting involved with various community and environmental projects, and I hope focusing on things that make for a different kind of success.
Okay. Financial services as a background then, but I mean, yeah. You attracted some controversy when there was the TV crew over recently, sort of talking about it as being a dodgy tax haven. I don't want to put words into your mouth. But,
That's absolutely fine. Lots and lots of people did put words into my mouth. In fact, on that particular programme, I didn't use the word tax haven, although I think the producers might have. And what I did say in my subsequent clarification on MTTV was that almost anywhere can be a tax haven. The City of London is a huge tax haven. The point for me was that what might be seen as harmful tax practices, and sometimes we talk about tax practices that damage developing countries so that they don't get the tax take they might need to bring their people out of poverty. But actually what this programme was focusing on was the fact that because particular tax planning structures are available to big companies and multinational corporations, it puts the ordinary business in the street in the UK at a huge disadvantage. My point was that that is increasingly unacceptable in the eyes of the wider world. We've already seen retail financial services shrink rapidly, so people tucking money away in bank accounts and not declaring it in the UK, so that now there are legitimate offshore savings, but not the pound notes stuffed in a carrier bag that we used to see. But we need to consider the fact that the financial services industry in offshore jurisdictions such as ours needs transforming, so it becomes more skills-based, more intellect-based, and particularly doesn't use artificial devices to deny other countries their tax take.
Well, I think it's last week Theresa May's government is talking now about closing all sorts of loopholes and actually making it almost illegal to have tax avoidance, because it was always a case that, you know, tax avoidance was legal, tax evasion wasn't.
That's right. And the argument has changed to a stance that seems to be put more faith in morals than legality.
Yes.
Which is interesting.
Is that a good move?
I think it is, if we want to play our part as good global citizens, and if we don't want to stay dependent on a sunset industry, an industry that's going to carry on being decline as groups like the OECD and the EU attack what they see as harmful tax practices. So regardless of your stance morally on tax planning, if you want to have a sustainable industry in the Isle of Man, we need some new devices.
All right. Now let's get back to politics, because this is your second bite of the cherry
at
being an MHK. You stood at last year's by-election, but you stood as a Lib Van member at that time.
I did.
This time not. Why?
I have immense respect and affection for Lib Van, and I'm really grateful to them for the start that they gave me in politics. An awful lot of their policies are very similar to the ones that I hope the Green Party, when it's fully registered, will espouse, and they're certainly ones that I carry dear to my heart. However, anybody who knows me knows that I'm passionate about environment and community and people's well-being, and the Green Party, as I understand it, is more in line with those values. So I would hope that in due course, when the Green Party is registered, and in the happy event it manages to get people into Tynwald, there will be lots of areas where Lib Van and the Greens would be working together.
Do you think party politics could work in the Isle of Man?
I do. I think it's quite important, really, for parties that have policies that are held in common with those members within that party, can know that they can marshal a reasonable challenge to things that might be happening in Tynwald.
OK, but I mean, all the political parties, Manx Labour Party and Lib Van, would say that you know, this is a collective almost of people with similar views on things.
Yeah.
But, you know, Tynwald is made up of mostly independent minds, isn't it? So do you not think there's any danger in party politics taking over where it becomes a tit-for-tat thing like in the House of Commons?
Yeah, it's all down to motivation, isn't it? It's all down to what people want to do. And you have to hope that we're going to get good candidates with integrity. As to how independent everybody who's been a key in recent years or much longer than that is, there are views and views. Some people think that actually there is less independence than one would hope.
So there is a sort of an establishment party. Is that your concern?
I've certainly heard
somebody
that argued.
Somebody suggested that to me. Yeah. Okay. Now, so this isn't your first time. Did you learn? Do you think from standing in the by-election, were there any big lessons that came across?
Yep, there were. Do lots of listening and less talking. That was one. time your knocking on the doors to get people when they're in. It's very hard to get round everybody in your constituency, so you have to do your darndest. People's views, people's concerns varied from the quite parochial, the dog poo and parking type discussions, to the national level. So lack of trust in government and government institutions. The fact that there is an emerging squeezed middle, so the people who you need looking after are not just the obviously very vulnerable. More and more, I talked to people who had a nice house and a car in the drive, but were saying they were worried about turning the heat on.
Yeah.
And wearing two jumpers and so forth. And they're feeling the pinch in all sorts of subtle ways.
Was it depressing in any way, talking to people about dog poo when you were standing to be a national politician?
No. Do you know what? The things that matter to people, that make their well-being, or what we used to call quality of life, if that's what they want to talk about, that's what you should be listening to. I do think that central government and local authorities maybe need to develop better communications, maybe more mutual respect, and a lot of those issues can be dealt with better by local authorities. But that doesn't mean that people in central government should limit themselves to national strategy. They are there to represent the island, but also to represent and understand the lives of their constituents.
OK. What do you think the biggest challenges are facing the next administration?
Oh, good question. So there are financial challenges. Public sector pensions comes up again and again and again.
What's your view on that?
That the public sector pension scheme should be closed to new entrants on its defined benefit basis, and a scheme opened on a defined contribution basis, that where there are defined benefits ongoing, we should be looking to average salary over lifetime with the government as opposed to final salary. Other major issues are that we do need to start looking for Brexit, obviously, is going to be a big challenge, and the visibility on exactly what that means for us as a nation with international trading routes is the visibility is very low, but we need people who are able to engage with those issues, defend the island's reputation, and get very proactively involved, or as proactively involved as we're going to be allowed to be in those discussions.
Isn't a lot of the problem with this that, you know, we don't necessarily have even a seat at the big table? We're talking about things like Brexit. And, you know, a lot of this is predicated on the UK government's goodwill towards us. And if we've not got that, then we can't do anything. You know, various people are saying, oh, we need to fight hard. You can only fight if you're actually in the arena, can't you?
Yeah, I think part of what we're going to need is a good negotiating skills and good relationships with people in government in the UK and also in the wider world, because a lot of relationships with other countries will need examining as well.
OK. You say that you want a fairer society. I don't think anybody would disagree with that.
It's hard to disagree, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of people are saying that it's become a two-tier society now, especially in the Isle of Man. I mean, do you agree with that? And what can be done about it?
I do. I think what we're seeing is a widening inequality gap and a number of pressures on families, households and businesses that are sometimes quite subtle, but are increasing the costs to them and degrading the access to services or to great resources like our green spaces and so forth. So I would love to see a government that is less focused on GDP growth and full employment. Those things can be very good, but they are very limited indicators. And in fact, the architect of GDP growth as a measure said that it was a very limited indicator of the health and sustainability of a society. What we need to focus on are the other things as well that make life worth living. So people having a sense of security, of having enough, maybe not too much.
Quality of life,
mm-hmm. Community, the ability to enjoy various things without having to spend a lot of money at it. There are things that can contribute to GDP growth that are very bad. So the often quoted example is train wrecks and so forth. They create economic activity, but they're not what you'd call positive. So I think we need to get behind headline figures such as GDP growth and look at the things that really matter to make people feel happy and thriving and full of opportunity,
but
able to keep learning.
Isn't that the problem, in that what makes one person happy and all the rest of it might make somebody else unhappy? And, isn't that always the problem in finding that balance?
Well, everybody's different, and that's the beauty of it. But there are a number of things that are come forward again and again in research as being shown to contribute to quality of life, and they are social connections, feeling safe, good health, continuing to learn, feeling valued, feeling listened to, having enough.
OK. Where do you stand on things like the tax cap?
I have to say, I think the tax cap could usefully be raised. I would like to see more progressive taxes here. In fact, what I would like to see, and I think this is a theme that Lib Van candidates have spoken about in the past as well, is a full root and branch review. Sorry, that was a horrible cliche. A full review of our tax system, our welfare system, and the means testing of access to various services, so that people who really need help get it and that resources are diverted to where they're most needed. I'd also like to see a greater emphasis on priority budgeting, which is to say, rather than a government taking last year's budgets and incrementally changing them year on year, a little up or a little down, that we start with a clean sheet of paper and say, what do we need to do where? What resources have we got to address them with? And where are we going to get the best bang for our buck for our people?
All right. I mean, when we've spoken previously about green issues and things like that, we've enjoyed a bit of give and take on that. But as far as green issues are concerned, mm-hmm. and I know that you feel very strongly about things like that, mm-hmm. but, you know, aren't you sometimes going to be at odds with the desire for economic growth where green issues might have to take a back seat? How would you square that?
Sometimes there is a cost to being green. Sometimes being green is a great thing for your bottom line, for your profits, and sometimes being green is a great benefit to the government finances because it helps protect people's mental and physical well-being. It can have knock-on benefits for the economy by encouraging tourism, by encouraging better premium-priced food exports, all those sorts of things. It can give you more energy security and more price security. It can give you more food security. So sometimes just looking at the pounds and pence might mean that things don't look particularly sensible. But actually, in many cases, being green, being environmentally friendly saves the economy and the government an absolute fortune.
All right. The budget is the big problem, really, isn't it? It's balancing the book seems to be the big problem that's going to face the next administration. Where do you stand on this? We can either save money, we can either cut out some of the fat, if there is any fat still left in government, or we can make more money. You know, which do you see? And you know, do you have any examples of how you would do either of those things?
Yeah, that's a really good point, and it is going to be a tough nut for whoever comes. There will be areas where we can save money. I've heard lots of conversation on this very show about whether we need the expensive schemes that are being talked out about for the promenade and so forth. My big worry is that services will be cut and money will be saved in a way that hits the most vulnerable. So the challenges that people have been through trying to obtain their benefits, the savings on closing one particular office so that people have to travel on the bus from the south to sign on for the dole, losing half-price bus tickets for people looking for work. All of those things might not sound big, but when you're on not very much income, it really hurts. And it's not just, as I say, the very vulnerable. It's also beginning to hurt the middle classes and the more comfortably off. We certainly do need to find new ways to earn our livings, and I would love to see us getting more involved with some of the, well, I was about to say clean tech and new technologies, but actually sometimes it's about going back to older ways of doing things that are more appropriate technologies. And a lot of those, especially in the food industry, can revolve around producing really good quality food to maybe organic standards, maybe non-GM food chain standards, so that we have something that the world will appreciate as a terrifically Manx product.
Okay, so you think that there is sort of more scope in the Isle
of
Manx type
idea? There's lots more scope, yeah, absolutely.
But, I mean, could we build the say, agriculture up to a point where it's worthwhile exporting? Even if we, you know, if we did come up with a great Manx sort of product, could we export it in sufficient quantities to make any difference?
I think we could. I think it's about focusing on, for the export market, about focusing on premium priced products, but it's also important that we're able to give local people access to reasonably priced good fresh food here and on the island as well. So we need to do those two things in tandem, and some people will excel at one and some people will excel at the other, but it is really important that we manage to get good fresh food into people's hands as well locally.
We've touched on public sector pensions, and part of the problem that's perceived with the solution that the government's come up with at the moment, they say it's going to take decades to get out of a situation that it's taken decades to get into. Which I can understand that, but they're talking about economic growth as being one of the ways that this is going to be paid for. Now, economic growth isn't going to be created by government. It might be facilitated by government, but you know, it's the private sector that's got to do that for the benefit of the public sector. That doesn't seem fair to me.
For the benefit of the public sector. Well, when the public sector benefits, the people benefit, because the public sector is able to... Oh, I see what you mean. Sorry, you're talking about the impact on pensions there. Yeah, I can see why people would feel aggrieved at that. And that's why a line needs drawing underneath that potential ongoing liability sooner rather than later.
Okay. Let's talk about constituency issues then. So what are the big constituency issues as far as you're concerned?
Well, Douglas East is a terrific constituency. It's incredibly diverse. It has some lovely areas. It has some great green spaces. It has some beautiful houses. And then it has some fairly tired areas that do need some love and attention. And I think it's important that those areas get given that attention so that the people who live there have a safe, clean and appealing environment to live in, but also that the businesses that work there and the visitors that come to what is effectively one of the main gateways to the Isle of Man see an appealing area.
All right. An awful lot of your constituents will live in flats, probably privately rented flats.
Yeah.
Do you think enough is done for them?
I don't. I think there is more that we can do in looking at developments that give affordable accommodation of good quality to single person or two person households. Some of the building stock is not best equipped to fit with that. Some of it's getting tired and damp and smelly and not the nicest. And any incentives that we can give people to improve that will improve the likelihood of the kind of workers that we might need to come and of good places for our own people to live.
And what about people who say that, you know, it's difficult to recruit people at the moment for various reasons?
Yeah.
Do you think that we need to recruit an awful lot of external workers?
Do we need to recruit an awful lot of external workers? I think we need to up our skills in certain areas. I would like to think that a large part of the skills gap can be filled by appropriate training, but we won't manage to fill it all. It is important that we bring in, I was going to say use the word experts, it's always a dangerous word, but it's important that we bring in expertise in certain industries so that our people can learn from you. You don't raise your own game by working with people who know no more than you. So you do need to import that show how and know how and let it populate the rest of the working the workforce, yeah, and import those skills into the island sometimes.
Okay. What about things like the work permit system? Do you think that that works? Because there are calls for it to be relaxed,
yeah,
aren't there?
Yeah, there are. I think I would be sad to see a huge influx of unnecessary workers, but as has been said recently, we do have fairly full employment. I do get concerned that actually what looks like full employment is a lot of people who are underemployed or juggling a couple of part-time jobs. Sorry, I'm not answering your question, am I? Let me come back to the point that you were trying to get at. I think the work permits regime needs applying in a very considered way so that we do bring in people with those extra skills that we need here on the Isle of Man to help grow our own people, but that we don't open the floodgates to people who might take jobs that our own people are well capable of doing. And
right,
sometimes you hear of that being done very sensibly. Anecdotally, you hear sometimes the contrary.
Consultations then, and consulting the public.
Mm.
Now, a lot of people seem to feel that politicians are far too remote from the electorate.
Yeah.
They only knock on the door once every 5 years,
yeah,
and then that's the end of it for 5 years. How would you stay in touch with people, or wouldn't you want to? Do you believe that if you're elected, you've been employed to do a job, and you're just happy to go on and get on with it?
No, I think it's really important to stay directly in touch with your constituents and the people of the Isle of Man, and you can do some of that through social media, but not everybody is digitally enabled. You can do some of that through meetings. Not everybody can get out and about. You can do some of it through consultation papers issued online or available from the library. But actually, those are sometimes woefully advertised, and people, especially if they don't read a local paper, they're unaware that they've been asked about. I can't tell you the number of times I've seen the outcome to a consultation being published in the paper and people say, I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Nobody ever asked me about that. So I think it needs to happen in conjunction with better engagement and I don't mean this patronisingly, education of the public. If they understand more about the issues that help governments make decisions, and if they understand what they might have to sacrifice if they want a particular option, and if they believe that their views will be listened to, that it's not window dressing, and it's made accessible to them, then I think we'll get better turnouts at elections, we'll get more trust in the government, and we'll get a much better type of engagement.
So you're quite happy to engage with people.
Definitely.
Isn't the problem with that, though, that it's the vociferous few who tend to have a voice about things? The silent majority, they're not going to get the views to you. So are you happy that you would be representing the electorate properly?
It's a good point that you make, and you're absolutely right about the vociferous minority. I think a politician's job is to ask the question and then patiently listen. So don't be a little bit selective. Understand the people who are perfectly articulate and perfectly happy to hog the airtime, sometimes with very good intentions, but also to make sure that you talk to a wide range of people. So earlier this year, with my Ecovanin hat on, we ran a wellbeing workshop week around the island, and we asked people what they thought would contribute to better well-being on the Isle of Man. We had such a diverse range of people. It was fantastic. And the things that they said were really heartening. They were generous. Nobody wanted more money out of 520 suggestions we got.
Right.
They all wanted things like better understanding for people with mental health problems, better access to affordable fresh food, more places where you can have a community gathering without needing to pay £2.70 for a cup of coffee, and so on and so forth.
OK. You mentioned a lack of community. Is that a real problem? I always thought that the Isle of Man was a great community, fairly tight-knit.
I think there are So the way we think about community these days is different from how it used to be, I think. It's not always geographical. So your community might be the kinds of people like you who work in the jobs like you, or it might be an online community. There are, especially for people who are in employment, there are folks who are very gregarious, and there are areas of the island where there is a good sense of community, but there's also an awful lot of isolation. I found that when knocking on doors, there are people who don't know that there are events they can go to, don't see people from one day to the next. And I think if we can make available community facilities that are unintimidating, open to all, let people of different walks of life mix together and get an understanding with each other, that would be a real boon.
All right. You're a member of Douglas Council.
I am.
If you're elected as an MHK, is that going to be a little bit like going up to big school?
I think that would be rather patronising to Douglas Council, actually. The councillors do terrific work. They're excellent value in the community, and they are very closely in touch with their community. So it's different. It's not like going up to big school.
All right, we're pretty much out of time, but why should the people of Douglas East vote for Kat Turner?
Well, I'd very much hope that the people of Douglas East will vote for me because they will see someone who has experienced a wide variety of things in life, from being wealthy to being poor, from being in the business sector to working on community things, and who wants to give something back to an island that's in many ways been very kind to me and my family.
Brilliant. OK, candidate for Douglas East, Kat Turner, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.